Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
One of those things, couple of guys.
Andy Randy.
Having discussion.
I be on it all night, man. I be on it all day. Straight up. If you want me, you can find me in that.
What are you looking at me like that for?
What are you talking about? We're supposed to make eye contact.
It's the Midday Show with
Andy Barker and my son, my baby boy, Randy McMichael.
When I crack open this mic.
That was the most media member thing that's ever been said.
Starring Randy Montez McMichael as Randy and my firstborn son, Andrew Stephen Bunker as Andy.
The pumps make the yams more yammier.
The whats make the whats more whattier?
Boring answer.
Just make sure you don't touch that dial, then we'll be cool. Touch it and use the fool.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yeah. And a good Memorial Day to you, Crisco Forth. Along with Jason Longshore, we are in today for Andy and Randy. Glad to be here. Glad to be keeping you company. No sports, right? At least not today, but at least the weather's good, right?
Take that. It's a start.
Yeah, weather's good. The unofficial start to summer, so glad to have you along with us. Jason and I got a lot of stuff to get into today. Normally, we would be talking about the Indy 500 today. First time since 1946, the Indy 500 was not ran on, or is not being run on Memorial Day. So it's a little different right now.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of figuring out what this is going to be in pro sports, college sports, high school sports. Everything is included right now as we see what we can do safely, and what it's going to look like as the rest of the year goes on.
Yeah, and I want to get your thoughts because obviously. Your involvement with MLS and really soccer at every level within this state, quite frankly. There are some things happening in the soccer community worldwide. We've seen Bundesliga return and be able to play, and that's at least given us a little bit of something sports-wise on TV beyond a Michael Jordan and now a Lance Armstrong documentary to watch. But, you know, I think the rest of both amateur, and when I say amateur, I'm referring to college sports, and professional sports, Jason, can look to the way Bundesliga has handled this in Germany and be able to incorporate maybe some of these same sort of measures, safety measures that they have put into play, and be able to bring that over to allow sports to resume in this country.
Yeah, the Bundesliga, Christian Seifert, their CEO, has talked about having conversations with every league in the United States, honestly, every league around the world, as to how they're doing this. And as we know, Germany has handled the coronavirus outbreak a little differently than some countries around the world. They have really kept it under control to this point, and that's allowed them to get back on the field. But it hasn't been easy. I mean, they went through a protocol creation process that went through every stage of government. They had to get a sign off from every different department. And they've talked about how they've looked at this with a sense of responsibility to do it the right way, to show that it can be done, and also to set an example. And I think every league here, the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, the NBA, obviously MLS in a soccer sense, they're all looking to what the Bundesliga is doing, not just on a match day, but training, all the protocols, all the testing procedures, all the different things that it's taken for them to be able to get back on the field safely.
How far away are we from seeing Atlanta United, in your opinion?
I think we're getting pretty close. It seems like everybody is really pushing to get back on the field or on the court by the beginning of July. And I think MLS might be the one that can get there first. The NBA, as they started talking about the Orlando plan, that actually MLS has been talking about an Orlando plan as well, you know, maybe the NBA is like, I don't know if we're quite ready yet. We're going to have to push back a little bit. It's looking like later in July now. The National Hockey League, will have to see how long it's going to take them. Major League Baseball, I don't see them back at the beginning of July. I think July 4th is what they're shooting for, but they don't have an agreement yet with their players on the money side and on all of the protocols. MLS is getting really close to finalizing all of this. I think by the beginning of July, we could see soccer matches played behind closed doors, and right now that would be in Orlando at the Disney facility, and games would be with every team in the league playing down there.
And what would the level of play look like after this long of a delay?
That's a good question, and watching the Bundesliga has been really interesting in that regard, because I felt like early on in matches, games looked a little sloppy. The fitness, I think, is something that you're working back to, because right now in MLS, almost every team is training individually. So you can do some individual fitness work, but that's not going to prepare you to be sharp and in rhythm once you start playing. And as we know, you can run, you can ride a bike all day. That's not the same as match fitness. That's not game fitness. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time. But one thing that FIFA has done, and most leagues around the world are implementing this, 5 substitutions, allowing 2 extra substitutions to be able to manage the minutes a little bit, both as teams are coming back, but also because you're probably going to play a little bit more of a condensed schedule to make up games.
Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore, glad to be with you. It is Memorial Day again. We want to take a moment today and remember those that gave their lives, that allow guys like us to come in and do this, to talk about these frivolous things like sports, given what we're facing in this, not just in this country, but in this world right now. Certainly, we appreciate all those who gave their lives, those of you who have served previously, and those of you who serve today. If you are out and about today, I can tell you from experience, I did not get to meet one of these fine ladies and gentlemen this morning on my way in, but I can tell you that the Georgia Highway Patrol is out in force today on I-75 at least. So if you're going to be out and about today, maybe back off the gas pedal just a little bit. Just a little bit. Like I say, I did not get to meet any of these fine people this morning, and I'm thankful for that. But, again, there were some folks both in front of me and behind me that were not quite as lucky on the drive-in today. So be careful.
Yeah, wave as I go by at a safe speed.
Yes, exactly. Give them the nod. Thank them for their work they're doing in trying to keep us all safe. Here's what we've got coming up today Jason and I are in for Andy and Randy here on the Midday Show. Lynn Scarborough, who is the editor for Lindy's College Football Preview magazine, he'll join us about an hour and 15 minutes from right now. We will get a chance to talk a little bit of college football. Of course, Lindy's Preview magazine, as tradition, it hits the shelves late May, early June. You should start to find it in the supermarkets and the bookstores here coming up very soon. I want to hear from Lynn, Jason, what the challenges have been to try to put an issue like this together now and get it to the printers in a time when a lot of people aren't in the office right now.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. I mean, everybody working remotely and figuring out how that goes right now, to put a magazine like that that has such a rich history and tradition, and everybody has an expectation of the level of quality and in-depth insight you're going to get. How are you able to do that right now when everybody is kind of scattered?
You and Mike, of course, Mike Conte, Jason Longshore, they are the voices of Atlanta United. You hear them here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. When all of this stuff happened, and we talked about this earlier, and I want you to tell the story again because I just heard it for the first time. I haven't heard Mike tell this. Maybe he has. I haven't heard it. It's an interesting story because you guys were, not only were you on the road with Atlanta United, you were out of the country with Atlanta United, and we talked about that timeline going back to in March when, and let's face it, it will forever be known as, you know, the marking for this will be Rudy Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's where it started, and then everything escalated within just a couple of hours of Rudy Gobert testing positive, did everything in the sports world change, literally shut down. You guys were in Mexico.
Yeah, it was a wild trip because, you know, Atlanta United and Club America is a huge matchup in the soccer world in this hemisphere. So to have the opportunity to go to Mexico City and call a match from the Estadio Azteca, we were incredibly excited and honored to be part of that broadcast. But it was surreal because when we arrived in Mexico on the Monday, I saw one person at the airport wearing a mask. It hadn't really hit in Mexico at all yet. There were really no concerns with coronavirus in Mexico on the Monday. Tuesday, you started to see some Champions League matches played in Europe, and you saw a few played behind closed doors. So we're starting to wonder, all right, is this going to be the norm here in the United States coming soon? On the way to the stadium on Wednesday, we were talking about that, and it looked like the NBA was going to be behind closed doors starting the next day, and there was speculation about MLS, and nobody really knew what was going to happen yet. That's on the way to the stadium. By the time we get there, you start to hear the news about Rudy Gobert testing positive and that game being held up. And we're sitting at the Estadio Azteca with the Atlanta Hawks broadcast in our ear because they were before us that night. And Steve Holman talking about the news as it's breaking, as he's calling a game, yes, that the NBA is shutting down. And nobody really knew what that meant at the time. Were they shutting down the season? Was it canceled? Were they putting it on hold? What was going to happen? We didn't know. So by the time we kick off, it's just a surreal night to begin with. And then it's a bad start in the first half for Atlanta United. I was able to keep my head kind of locked into the game for a long period of time as the second half wound down and we're getting past midnight and you're starting to see things come through on your Twitter timeline about just where everything stands. It was the strangest broadcast because it went from a night of just incredible excitement to a night of, we have no idea what's going to happen next, and we're about to fly back to the United States.
Were you ever concerned about whether or not you'd be able to get home?
Yeah, a little bit. There was a little bit of that, and it was like, well, what do we do if that isn't allowed to happen? And we didn't really know at first. And, you know, I said when we got there, there was one mask on somebody at the airport. When we left, and it was immediately after the game, we went straight to the airport. Everybody had a mask. Everybody had gloves on. Everything was very safe at that point. It had changed that much in just a couple of days. And the sports world still hasn't recovered from it.
Yeah. Wow. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore. Glad to be with you on this Memorial Day. Again, we'll talk a lot about Atlanta United today. We'll talk about Bundesliga and what's happening there. And again, I think they are the league right now professionally that is kind of setting the bar for the other leagues, including Major League Baseball, including the NBA, including MLS, and maybe even the NFL and college football to a degree in this country. They're looking to see how they're approaching things in Germany, and then how can we mimic that over here? What protocols can we follow to be able to provide a safe environment? It looks more and more like the idea of being able to attend any sporting event in person. Looks like you're probably looking at fall at the best right now, based on what you're hearing.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. One interesting test that could come up in the next month is the NWSL, the Women's Professional Soccer League here in the United States. They're going to do the short tournament idea, and it hasn't been ratified just yet, but the idea is to do this in Salt Lake City. Utah hasn't had much of an issue with the coronavirus, and they're exploring the idea of having a very limited number of people in the stands. That might be one of the first test cases.
Interesting. You know, NASCAR is talking about possibly sometime in July trying to allow fans to come back. I don't know that that's going to happen. That's something that they are talking about. You know, right now they're kind of running in a schedule where they're able to run in North and South Carolina, which is easy for a lot of those teams. Of course, we had the Charlotte 600 yesterday. That's easy travel for most of those teams because they all, for the most part, are based in and around the Charlotte area and that area of North Carolina, so it's easy travel for them. Will be interesting to see what that looks like. You had the University of Michigan president come out yesterday and say, if we don't have students on campus, we will not play intercollegiate athletics in the fall. Now, I read something earlier this week where Bob Bowlesby, who is the commissioner of the Big 12, was interviewed by the Dallas Morning News last week, and he said that, don't be surprised, he said, head coaches, athletic directors, conference commissioners, university presidents, he said everybody needs to understand that there is a good chance that we will see some college football games get forfeited this year.
It's just inevitable, and you're going to see it, especially with some of the smaller schools. You mentioned the travel with NASCAR. Cost-cutting is going to be a major part of all this.
Yep, we'll get into all of that as we continue today. We'll take a look at what's trending. The Charlotte 600 yesterday, Brad Keselowski got the win. Also, you've got Phil and Tiger, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning yesterday. It was a fun event. I hope you got a chance to see some of that. We'll do that when we come back. It's Chris and Jason in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Off turn four into the checkered flag. Michigan's Brad Keselowski wins NASCAR's longest ever race.
And that's the way it went down, well, sometime early this morning after NASCAR's longest race, the Charlotte 600. Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore, this is what's trending on your Memorial Day Monday. Brad Keselowski gets the win. He edges Jimmy Johnson, who, after, I guess they thought Jimmy Johnson had finished second in this race, and then they go back later. He fails the post-race inspection, so Jimmy Johnson did not finish second. Chase Elliott ends up being the official second-place finisher. So nice win for Brad Keselowski. This race was already delayed by rain to start, and then you went to you had overtime. Longest race in NASCAR history, 607 miles. They end over 607 miles. They end up racing. It goes on until after midnight. By the way, one other note on Jimmy Johnson, Jason, you remember a decade ago, that guy dominated NASCAR. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was like, you know, he was like Tiger Woods with the way he was racking up wins in NASCAR. He's now gone 102 races without a win.
That is wild. That is crazy. This race last night was pretty crazy because you mentioned it's the longest race in NASCAR history. It's not like they're in a normal schedule right now either.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're racing two times a week, sometimes three times a week, and the toll it takes on you. You know, we don't talk about fitness much with NASCAR, but it's been a huge part of the conversation here lately because the pounding these guys take inside the car, but also just the physical fitness, the mental strength to be able to deal with that. And you got to feel awful for Chase Elliott. I mean, as close as he's been in these last two races, to have this happen, they decide to pit and nobody else goes in. They expected people to follow him. They don't. And he loses the race on that. I mean, it's just bad luck. And Bill Elliott never won the Coca-Cola 600 either. And now Chase hasn't won it.
And he didn't flip anybody off.
No. Well, we didn't see it. there could have been some words with the crew chief and all of that because it was the decision to go in and pit, and that didn't look so good in hindsight.
All right. Also, yesterday, and this was great, the weather for it was horrendous, but the Champions for Charity event raising $20 million for COVID-19 relief. Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady yesterday. The one thing that you can say about this yesterday, Jason, is I think it's clear that Tom Brady has definitely been spending his offseason focused on football and not his golf game after watching him yesterday. The poor guy, look, it's hard to feel sorry for Tom Brady, all right? But the dude's out there playing in a torrential downpour. He loses to Peyton, which you know doesn't sit well, and he splits his pants.
True.
On national TV.
But he had the shot of the day.
Yes, he did.
He did have the shot of the day, and you got to give him credit for that because everybody was talking trash to him. I mean, everybody on Twitter, because this was a charity event, and it ended up raising over $20 million, which is amazing. But that front nine's going on. Every celebrity on Twitter is taking shots at Brady. Like, well, I'll give $100,000 if you get a par. I mean, it was craziness. And then he gets that shot. Back nine was fun.
It was.
The back nine was a lot of fun. The format helped.
Right.
I think the format definitely helped with it. But it was entertaining. And to have the guys mic'd up and to have the little bit of trash talking that was going on, I think by the time they got to the back nine, I think they were all comfortable with the format, comfortable with the idea of having people in their ear the whole time. And it was a fun event to watch on TV.
Yeah, I thought, I have long been a proponent that Charles Barkley should be on every pregame show. Like, I think Charles should be on, the Fox should put Charles on their baseball coverage. He should be on the NFL coverage.
We'll have it's Barkley just, for MLS. I'd love to have it.
Oh, he's just a naturally funny guy. He doesn't take himself that seriously, and he's great at taking his jabs at other people. Tiger Woods, though, won it yesterday. Here is Tiger for the win.
Tiger with the putter in hand. On his home course for the win.
Oh.
All right. Well, that ought to do it. Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, the winners of Capital One's The Match.
Jason, I guess Tiger's ready to go, right? I mean, PGA is going to start back June 11th. I don't think he would have played in this charity event. I don't think he would want to put himself out there if he wasn't healthy. So it looks like, sounds like, we're going to get a healthy Tiger when the PGA starts back in 2.5 weeks or so.
When you think back to Tiger's maybe second era, and you think to how good he was scrambling, because he'd missed the fairway a ton, did not miss a fairway yesterday at all. And there were concerns about his back earlier in the season. He pulled out of the Players' Championship that ended up only getting one round in. He looks like he is ready to go.
Also, as we take a look at what's trending here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore, in for Andy and Randy today. The SEC has set a date for the return of their athletes, at least for football, men's and women's basketball. They can resume athletic activities beginning June the 8th. Athletes will not be able to work out with coaches during this time. Basically, it's going to be the strength and conditioning coaches that are going to oversee things. The SEC says they are preparing to begin the fall season as scheduled. They are calling this voluntary athletic activities. Again, it's only for football, men's and women's basketball. Big 12 is doing the same thing. They're going to start June the 15th. And in the Big 12, they say the rest of their sports will be able to return July 1st. I don't know if the SEC has come out and said that yet, but certainly I know starting June 8th, the SEC says they will be, which is, I guess, 2 weeks from today, the SEC says they'll bring back football, men's and women's basketball.
Yeah, once the NCAA gave the go-ahead, the SEC wanted an extra week to get schools ready. You know, it's kind of hard to ramp everything up immediately right now. And what this first step is getting players back on campus, getting players back into a training environment, but it's also an opportunity to establish some of the protocols that are going to be necessary, that are going to be with us throughout the season. And it's the same thing that most sports have done. You bring players back in an individual basis first, you do individual sessions with them. You get the players' buy-in on the protocols as well, because they're going to have to do things differently than they're used to. I mean, we've seen it with Atlanta United. Guys are training in one part of the field by themselves right now. They have to bring their own equipment. They have to bring their own water bottle. I mean, all this little stuff that you kind of take for granted.
Right.
They're figuring out what it looks like every day. And for the SEC, for every major college conference, that's what this period will be.
Louisville, by the way, in the ACC, they are bringing their athletes back Wednesday of this week, day after tomorrow.
Yeah, the NCAA allowed them to do it earlier. The SEC wanted to wait a little bit, and some of the thought process sounded like they wanted to make sure they do it right. They also didn't want schools to be in a position where they're doing it in a rushed way. There's going to be a lot of eyes on Louisville because, you know, these types of protocols and this type of training, it's not something you've ever seen before. So they've got to get it right. You know, we talked about responsibility on the Bundesliga side. Louisville's got to handle things the right way.
Well, and back to the SEC for just a second. When everything was announced okay, when we first started, you know, when the Rudy Gobert thing happened and everybody started to realize what was happening, these schools did not all act at the same time.
Right.
Some of them acted early on, took extra precautions. Some of them acted later. Some of them did very little during that stretch. So I think just because the SEC says you can come back June 8th, I don't necessarily think that that means that everybody's back June 8th.
I totally agree. Yeah, I think, as we saw with Michigan, yeah. You know, you're going to have some schools that say, okay, other schools in our conference are coming back. We're not going to do it yet. And the big question I have about it is, what is the testing going to look like? Because that's going to be the key to keeping the players safe. And I think so far the SEC has talked about testing if symptoms show up. And that's a little worrisome because we've heard
it may
about
be too late.
Yeah, we've heard about the asymptomatic spread. And it's costly. You know, the cost is huge to do the amount of testing that it's going to require, especially on a football team with 100+.
Yeah, you've got, you know, 85 scholarship players. You've got walk-ons. You've got coaches. You've got support staff. You've got game day operation people that are all coming into contact with each other. There's a lot that has to go on in order. And you're talking about these tests are, what are they, roughly $60 a person?
Sounds like it. Anywhere between $60 and $100. It's expensive, and it's going to be an issue for some smaller programs, some programs that don't have as many resources. Numbers came out last week that if you play this upcoming season behind closed doors and you don't have spectators at all in college football, there's only two programs that will not be operating at a loss. Yeah. Both of them are SEC schools. It's Georgia and Texas A&M. But that's, you know, the type of numbers we're talking about, and when you add $15, $20 million a season to make sure you're doing all the proper testing, it's going to be difficult.
Now, according to ESPN, so take this for what you will, according to ESPN, canceling the college football season would result in schools losing a combined $4 billion if no games are played. So I think that's the other end of that spectrum is we got to figure out something. We can't do this at a loss. We've got to figure out something, some way to be able to get our product on the field.
We're seeing it in the soccer world where major leagues have major TV money behind it and they need to play to bring in that major TV money. But smaller leagues that don't have the major TV money, it's too expensive for them to come back and play right now with no fans in the stands. I think college football could end up looking at something like that.
Real quickly, as we wrap up our What's Trending segment here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the Midday Show, Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore, in for Andy and Randy. The NBA, they're trying, just like MLS, Jason, that we've already talked about, trying to figure out how to get their product back. The NBA is doing the same thing. They're talking about a deal in Orlando where they would bring, not all teams, mind you, they're talking, there's a couple of proposals out there, one of which would allow the top 24 teams to come back and play. The Hawks, by the way, would not be a part of that. So according to what I have seen and what has been written, Sports Illustrated said earlier last week that the NBA wanted to play a 70-game season. 70 is the magic number in the NBA. That's what you have to get your local TV money. The Hawks have played 67 games. So, now, is it worthwhile for the Hawks to take the expense of going to Orlando to be able to play those three games, to be able to get to satisfy that contract they have with Fox Sports? Or do you look at it and say, yeah, look, it's going to cost us too much money. We can't do that.
That's going to be what it comes down to for a lot of these decisions. A league source told ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski that they needed about 15,000 tests to do this. And I don't know which plan they were talking about, but 15,000 tests to do this, you're talking, you know, around $1 million. With the TV money that is out there on the NBA, local and national, okay, that's a little doable. You know, you talk scale for a football team with 100 tests, every time you test, 100+, that's difficult. For an NBA team, when you're talking 30, okay, it's a little more manageable. You can test more frequently. You can also eat that cost a little bit easier.
There is also a thought out there that says the more teams you have in Orlando, the greater risk you put the players at.
To a degree, and this has been a big conversation, you know, in the sporting world, is how you handle coming back. But if you are doing the protocols correctly, if you are doing the testing, and you sell the players on it and you make it clear, we are doing this, this, and this, so you are safe and you can play the sport, you don't have to worry about this. And everybody then follows the protocols. Because, you know, if players leave whatever the quarantine area is or whatever the area is, they're potentially, you know, creating risk. But if you follow everything, you're going to be safe. Then it really doesn't matter how many people are there if everybody is following Correct. The protocols and they are set up correctly.
Sounds like the NBA is pretty determined to finish their season.
Financially, I think they have to.
Yeah.
Because how much money are they giving back to their national and local TV partners if they don't?
And I think also it sounds like, if you believe what you read, sounds like they are pretty far down the road with Disney in these conversations. So we may get the NBA back sooner than any of us expect. Big deal, small deal, no deal. When we come back, Chris and Jason in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Jason Longshore, we are in for Andy and Randy here on the Midday Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, always online at 929thegame.com and on the radio.com app. Glad to have you hanging out with us. Time for Big Deal, Small Deal, No Deal. Our third amigo today, Kenneth Roundtree, able to hang out with us for a little while. He has put together some snazzy little questions for Jason and I to go through this week on Big Deal, Small Deal, or No Deal.
All right, guys, with colleges cutting sports like Furman just cut baseball last week, is this a big deal, or do you see these sports coming back in the future?
Jason, I think it's a big deal.
I think it's a huge deal.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. You're seeing a lot of those, and I always hated, having worked in college athletics before, I've always hated the phrase Olympic sports.
Right.
I hate that phrase, which in most schools, that's everything outside of football and men's basketball. They refer to as Olympic sports. I hate that phrase, but that is the group of sports that are going to suffer from this. It's going to be baseball. It's going to be women's softball. Collegiate wrestling, which I think is a fantastic sport that has already been in trouble in a lot of places outside of, you know, the Big Ten and a lot of schools in the Midwest. In the South, collegiate wrestling is struggling because a lot of programs don't offer it anymore. Collegiate wrestling could be suffering because of this as schools look to make cuts. I think it's a big deal, and it's one of those things, once you cut it, it's really hard, unless you have some sort of a groundswell like what happened at UAB
right.
with football, it's really hard to bring sports back.
Yeah, that's what's so difficult about it, is we don't know what the revenues are going to look like, not just this fall, but next year and the year after, because sponsorship money is going to be down this year and next. The financial industry is one of the leading sponsors of sports, period, worldwide. And they're taking a massive hit during this time. So where's the sponsorship money going to come from? Where's that advertising money going to come from? I'm with you. Once they cut it, unless, you know, alumni, unless people come in, boosters come in to bring a program back, it's going to be really hard to see it coming back anytime soon.
It's happened in a few places. It's happened with football. East Tennessee State University up in Johnson City, Tennessee, they went through that, decided they were going to be a basketball school. They cut football. They go to the Atlantic 10. A couple of years, there is a groundswell. It got to the point there to where the student body actually voted to raise the student fees, activity Right. fees, to be able to help fund the football program to be able to get it back. But you know, is anybody going to be willing to go to bat with for the women's track and field team or baseball or lacrosse or whatever it may be that might get lopped off because of this? Ken, what's next?
All right, guys. Cam Newton's younger brother, Caleb Newton, just transferred to Auburn from Howard as a graduate transfer. Is this a big deal? And do you think he will have a shot at taking Bo Nix's job?
I think this is a small deal. I think competition is good. The fact that his last name and who his older brother is, and the fact that, you know, your older brother is a legend on that campus, will it give some competition to Bo Nix? I think so. He's there partly because I think Auburn needed a little bit of depth at that position and somebody that has read defenses before at a higher level than high school. That is the reason why he's there. I think that's Bo Nix. Me and Randy and John Chuckery, we talk about this on College Football Game Time during the fall, but I think Bo Nix is poised to have a fantastic college career at Auburn. I like him. I think we saw enough out of him as a freshman to feel good about where he's headed.
Yeah, I think the name makes it a small deal, but it's actually no deal because I'm with you. I think Bo Nix is going to be the guy. He's going to be pushed a little bit here, and that's a good thing. That'll help him raise his game, but I'm not expecting him to lose his job over this. That's why I say it's no deal.
All right, another QB transfer in the SEC. Tua's younger brother, Talia, transferred from Bama to Maryland. How would this affect the Bama QB situation, especially if Mac Jones gets hurt?
Whew, I think this may be a big deal, like you said. Now, it's a big deal, but it's not that big of a deal because of the guy that's on the sideline over there who just continues to recruit. He recruits extremely well. And the one thing that they do at Alabama is they always seem to find ways to put guys in the right position. You know, they struggled last year on the offensive line. They did a lot of shuffling guys. They took a guy that was a tight end and made him a guard at Alabama last year because they're going to find ways to get the best guys on the field. I think they'll do this again. But if there's one thing that we have seen in college football over the last, and I feel like this has become a thing really in the last 10 years, you need to have big-time quarterback play in order to be able to. Look at Joe Burrow, mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence, Tua. You got to have those type of performances now in college football because of the way the game is played to be able to get there. And so that's the reason why I think this is a concern. I think Alabama will be fine. It also helps that you've got a coach that, look, if in Nick Saban's world, you're going to take the snap, you're going to turn around, you're going to stick it in the belly of a running back and let those big offensive linemen do the work for you. That's the way he would prefer to play. Now, maybe Alabama does a little bit more of that this year than what they've done the last couple of years when they've had Tua back there.
Yeah, I think this could end up being a big deal because you look at this year, you didn't have spring practice. Who knows what the lead up is going to look like to games? Who knows what the schedule is going to look like? You could see non-conference games not happen this year. That's something that's been talked about. Having somebody who's been in the program and knows the ins and outs of it as that backup is very important because, you know, depth is going to be key here. You always see injuries happen. We're actually seeing, you know, maybe a few more injuries early on as like the Bundesliga has come back, as teams are coming back. I think losing somebody who's been part of the program could end up hurting them if there's an injury. I think it could be a big deal.
You know, real quick, one other thing. When all of this, you mentioned the fact of not having spring practice or not having all of spring practice. I had a conversation with a Division I football coach right after this went down, and I asked him, he didn't get to have spring practice at all. And I said, what are you going to do? And he goes, I'm not worried about it. I think the NCAA is going to give us practice dates back. I think we're going to be able to bring guys back in the summer, and we will have essentially a spring practice in the summer before, you know, we'll give them a couple of weeks off and then bring them back for fall camp. That's what I think is going to happen. Had a conversation last week with a guy that's an associate athletic director, and I said, what are you hearing about this? He goes, man, I've heard nothing. Yeah. I have heard nothing.
I think it's changed.
And the problem that coaches are going to have with this is you've got some schools that were able to completely finish spring practice. Some of them got a couple of dates in or maybe halfway or two-thirds of the way through it. And there's some that didn't even get on the field at all to start spring. And the NCAA has always been about what we do for one, we do for everybody. And, we, you know, there's this whole balance of things. Are they going to toss that out the window? That's always been the NCAA's thing, right, is what we do for one, we're going to do for everybody. Does that get tossed out the window here? I think there's a lot of college football coaches that are waiting to see what happens.
It's going to be tough. I mean, you start working through the schedule, and when does normal practice usually start? Late July?
Yeah, late July.
Okay, you're going to start with some schools getting back in the next couple of weeks for individual practices. do you maybe get an extra week, maybe 2 weeks of practice? Started a little early, maybe, but can you do that nationwide?
Well, that's the thing. Every state has their own, and for that matter, even within their university system, there may be different parameters that have been set that may not allow that to happen. I don't know. I mean, that's one of those questions that nobody talks about in this, but somebody's got to figure out how to make this work.
Those logistics are going to be tough.
And the coaches that I feel bad about, how about a guy like Mike Norvell, who just took the job at Florida State, and you don't, you know, first off, you're in the Florida State Fishbowl. You got a ton of pressure on you. People expect you to win and win now because you're Florida State, and you come in, and yeah, you can watch a ton of film, but you can't get your hand and work with those guys the way you want to. And I know there's things they do now with, you know, with tablets and video conferencing and all this kind of stuff. That's not, it's just not the same until you can get live bodies on the field going against each other.
For me, this fall in college football, I think coaches who have been at the program for a number of years, have continuity with their staff, they're going to have a huge advantage. I think teams that have a lot of returning starters are going to have a huge advantage. It's going to be harder for freshmen than ever before to break in. It's going to be harder for players who haven't played much to break in. It's going to be continuity, you know, running supreme.
Last question, Ken. What do you got?
All right, guys, with the COVID-19 stuff going on, all these leagues going to come back here probably in the late summertime. We can see a month of August and September where we have pro and college football, soccer, NBA playoffs, NASCAR, golf, and Major League Baseball all playing at the same time. Which sports or sports could hurt from the sports overload in those months?
You know, Jason, you and I talked about this a little bit earlier, and I'm going to answer Ken's question in kind of an indirect way. One, I think what NASCAR has done in being able to get back onto the track and on people's television sets, I think it's huge. I think it's huge for a sport that has struggled from where they once were 20 years ago, when NASCAR, I think, was pretty solidified as the number four sport in this country at that point. That has changed. The TV ratings aren't there. Revenue is down. They don't. We talked about Jimmy Johnson going 100-plus races without a win. He, at one time, he was the face of NASCAR. I've said forever, you could strip the logos off those guys and pull the helmets off, line them all up. They've all got the same haircut. They all give you the same post-race quote. You couldn't tell any of them apart. They need a guy right now, and they need somebody. They need an Earnhardt, a Petty. They need a character. That's what has made NASCAR great. But for that sport, I think they needed to be in front of people. And to your sport, MLS, I think the MLS, this is a great opportunity. You're not having to compete with the NBA playoffs. You're not having to compete with Major League Baseball. This is a great opportunity for the MLS to attract new fans and to grow that sport. Now, again, that I say all that to say, yes, I want to see it back on the pitch, but I want to know that it's safe for the players, and if there are going to be spectators, I want it to be safe for them as well.
You've got to guarantee the safety or you can't get back. Like we talked about with the testing with football, you've got to have that to make this work. I think NASCAR, and Ken pointed it out as we were talking before the show, the iRacing idea was huge for NASCAR. Right. It made me more interested in NASCAR than I've been in a long time. I've watched more races than I've watched in a long time because it's there. And let's take the other side of that. You know, in August, you're going to have a bunch of stuff going on. I think the NBA is probably the one that wins at that point because it'll be the playoffs. I think that's going to help them a ton.
Agreed.
But when you look at the TV landscape in the fall, you haven't had shows. Normally, you're filming shows. You're filming pilots for new shows. You're filming shows right now to run in the fall. That can't happen. So networks are going to be desperate for live sports because it will be live programming that'll drive eyeballs. I think all of them will have an opportunity, and you'll see more games on broadcast TV than we're used to seeing. If MLS can get back, and if MLS can do their return, and they're talking about doing it in conjunction with ESPN, that would bring ABC into the equation. Fox would be wanting a piece of this as well. You could see more games from MLS on broadcast TV than we've ever seen in a season because the networks aren't going to have anything else to run.
There you go. Again, I think for a couple of those sports, that's where it's so important. And I think, you know, for MLS, which is a growing sport still and a growing sports league in this country, being in front of people right now is it's a big deal. We'll get to our NFL no huddle to kick off the 11 o'clock hour. One former Atlanta Falcon says if he doesn't get the money he wants, he is okay to sit out the season. We'll get to that next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.